we are doing, for example, with kids, a soccer game in which the referee is helping one of the teams and he's annulling the goals, and they start asking, like, why are you doing that? Like, that's not legal. Like, you need to follow the rules. And then we start talking about the re-election in El Salvador, because of the constitution, the immediate re-election is not allowed, but the president got re-elected.
Welcome to the Global Minnesota Podcast, connecting, informing, and engaging Minnesota with the world. Our mission is to advance international understanding and engagement in every corner of the state. We do this with a variety of programs, including our public events, K-12 education programs, Great Decisions discussion groups, and professional exchanges. To learn more, visit our website at globalminnesota.org. I'm Nicholas Hayen, Marketing and Communications Manager for Global Minnesota. In 2022, Global Minnesota was delighted to host fellows from the Young Leaders of the Americas Initiative, or YLI, to Minnesota as part of our professional exchanges program. The YLI program gathers emerging leaders from all across Latin America, the Caribbean, and Canada to advance their entrepreneurial ideas and effectively contribute to social and economic development in their home communities. These visitors stay for up to 5 weeks and receive hands-on experience with Minnesota businesses, nonprofits, and other organizations that help advance their careers. One such visitor was Luis Villaherrera, who is fighting for democracy and human rights in El Salvador. In 2017, he co-founded Tracoda, which stands for Transparency, Social Control, and Open Data, to create innovative projects that focus on technological tools to combat corruption and foster democracy. After the government banned his platform, he founded the Center for Democratic Strengthening. As part of this incredible work, he recently won a prestigious Obama Foundation Scholars Award and hopes to use the program to help build grassroots movements, deliver messages to a broader audience, and push for accountability in government throughout Central America and beyond. He has joined us today to talk about his Minnesota experience with the YLI program, his recent Obama Scholars Award, and the important work he is doing to advance government accountability in Central America. So, Luis Villaherrera, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to give back something to Minnesota.
So first, could you tell us just a bit more about yourself and how you first got involved with the YLI program?
Yeah, so the YLI program is more focused on like business-wise things. And my organization works more in the nonprofit sector. But for me, it was like, I'm going to give it a shot, and I applied for the program. And at the moment, I had this app that was called GovData, who was like an innovative tool to enhance access to public information. Because of GovData, I was selected to be part of the YLI program. And yeah, that was like the start of my journey with YLI.
Great. And you were here for about 5 weeks, if I recall correctly. So what were some of your most memorable and important experiences while you were visiting Minnesota?
I think it's funny because I was like part of these five people from the YLI experience. I went to the Summit of the Americas. I had the opportunity to go there. And after LA, I went to Minnesota, but I was not happy about the placement because I really wanted to go to DC because of my scope of work. The people I know and work related stuff are like in DC, right? So I was kind of disappointed to go to Minnesota. I that was my first time there. But when
at first you were thinking like, what is this? I want to go to DC and you're sending me to Minnesota. Yeah.
Like, and it was like, it was like a whole thing. But I'm glad that I was placed there because I had like so many good experiences with the staff from Global Minnesota and also with the people I work on Pillsbury community. But I was able to connect with Amy Klobuchar, like Tina Smith team, and engage with a lot of people in the community. So I learned a lot of things that happen in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. And yeah, it was great. I think it opened my eyes to know more about the U.S., more about the context of the people in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. So yeah, I think it was like overall a good experience.
Yeah, and you got to attend some of our events, didn't you? I believe you were featured on the cover of our annual report, from your photo taken at the gala.
Yeah, I mean, that was fun. Connecting with the people, like hearing them, why they are doing that job.
Yeah, I'm glad you got to have that experience because the gala is kind of unique in the way it brings about so many different people who are just connected to the international community, whether it's nonprofit or business or just people with an interest in foreign policy and public affairs. So it's nice that you got to have those connections as well and to hopefully use those in your career moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, the gala was great. A lot of the white lighters start dancing like in the stage, so it was
Yeah.
fun.
So then let's describe a little bit more the current situation happening in El Salvador and specifically how Torquato and you are working to advance government accountability.
Yeah, so just for the people who is listening to us, like the context in El Salvador, El Salvador was known to be like the capital of murders, a lot of killings, more than 15 killings per day. And then that shift, that changed with the new government that we have at the moment, because they implemented the exception state, which means basically it's kind of like a martial law that suppressed some human rights for the people. The government put in jail 3% of the population, almost 3% of the population. Now we do not have like the same human rights that we did before. The situation has changed in terms of security because now El Salvador is seen as the safest country in the Western Hemisphere without no killings, but we do not have access to the information like official information to verify that. So it's kind of tricky, you know. My organization has been working relentlessly on grassroots projects with different communities in El Salvador to teach them that democracy is important. We know that for a lot of people, democracy is an abstract concept. They don't care about it because they don't know about it. In terms of like for my family, it's better to have a roof under my head, under my children's, and a meal, because that's
Yeah.
my day-to-day like necessity, not democracy, because I don't understand what democracy is. So we're trying to reach out to these people for them to understand that democracy is important and it affects every aspect of your life. And we're doing that with different ideas. Let me tell you, like, just one example. We are doing, for example, with kids and younger people, a soccer game in which the referee is helping one of the teams and he's annulling the goals. And they start asking, like, why are you doing that? Like, that's not legal. Like, you need to follow the
Yeah.
rules. We said, like, okay, then the referee shut down the game just like that. Okay, it's done. You won. And then they start asking, like, why did you do that? Like, we still have time. We could have, like, won, but you didn't give us the chance. You didn't follow the rule. And then we start talking about the re-election in El Salvador because for the Constitution, the immediate re-election is not allowed. But the president got re-elected, even though it's unconstitutional. So we start talking about that. We make the connections that we have rules in place that we need to follow in order to have like a more peaceful, more like less polarized country or and so on. And they engage a lot in this soccer game because they care about it. So they start seeing like the some like matches in terms of like, oh, okay, so he's not following the rules. So that's not legal. But before they didn't know that. So it's kind of interesting how we are connecting the dots and in terms of like the programs that we are executing. Yeah, we're trying to implement other programs. For example, in this community that I'm kind of like, I love the people in that community. They are so kind. We're trying to bring all the women's to all the women into the same place and do like cooking classes, but to talk about democracy. Because the cooking is like the most important thing for them. It's something that unites the community. So it's the place in which you can put those concepts for them to understand in a more friendly way. So yeah, and we also have like this other area that we work, and it's technological tools. We are like one of the only organization in the region in Central America that is working with these kind of tools to fight corruption. And yeah, that's like another area that we work on too.
Yeah, I think that's really clever how you're meeting people where they are, in cooking classes and soccer games, and showing them in just a really tangible way, this great analogy of how democracy can fall apart, or how one side can tip the balance of the other and essentially make it, as they say, free and fair elections. It might be a free election, quote unquote, but not necessarily a fair one in the sense of you have individuals who might be, pushing the scales one way or another. I think that soccer analogy is really smart and a very good way for people to understand that a little bit better. I wonder what, how does your organization deal with the idea that, because you alluded to, it's kind of a trade-off between security and democracy for a lot of people. How does your organization work towards that trade-off when people say, well, if it's a choice between my livelihood or democracy, maybe they'll choose their livelihood.
It's interesting because I had like these conversations the last couple of weeks. We had elections like just like 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. Yeah, I think so. And the thing is, that's like a very concrete thing. And people in the streets know that they are safe now. I'm not arguing that security is not real because it is. People are safe now, and they acknowledge that, and that was the only like campaign that the president did, security. And it's interesting because security was the number one problem in El Salvador, according to different polls. The second one was economy, and so on and so forth. But now that we have a like we're safe, we're like we have security. I think we need to wait. It's a waiting game for people to understand that that's not the whole picture in terms of they need access to better education, they need access to better infrastructure opportunities. So now we're safe, we have security, but we need to wait the next steps in terms of what people can ask. After all of this, because if security is not a problem anymore, there's going to be other problems that people are going to face. And at that moment, we want to understand how the government is going to approach those areas.
I think it really makes sense to sort of decouple those two ideas, right? That it's not the dichotomy between security and democracy, that security has essentially been established, it sounds like, and that moving forward, we shouldn't necessarily think of, or Salvadorians shouldn't necessarily think of it as a stark choice between one or the other, that you can have both if you so choose.
But I think, yeah, I think people need to understand, like, at some point they are going to understand what democracy is, but I think it's going to be too late, because you're giving so much power to one person, and then it's going to be late. The Salvadorian people gave too much power to one person because democracy is something abstract, once again, like I said it before, and I think that's the problem. Security is something concrete that they feel, they sense, and democracy is not. So,
And it's a short-term fix that creates
yeah.
potentially a longer-term problem. So then how did you become an Obama scholar and tell us that experience so far?
I learned about the program and I thought, yeah, let's do it. I think it's a good opportunity to put the work that we do in a more international platform. I mainly did apply because of that. Because it's a big platform, I had access to President Obama, I talked with him, with different like senior officials that were with him in the White House, to ask some uncomfortable questions. Because I think if I'm in a platform like this, sometimes you need to ask hard questions to understand the dynamics that the US government has. Because, for example, the whole Western Hemisphere is so influenced by the US. Our problem of gangs is because the US create that when they deported the people in the jails in LA and they send them back to El Salvador. We didn't have gang members until that moment. So seeing like all the connections in terms of migration policy, in terms of like if they actually care of what is happening, or if the US government just care about the geopolitical influence, or if they see China coming to the region, and so on and so forth. So I apply because I really like to be transparent and honest in the conversations, and that requires sometimes to ask uncomfortable questions. And I mean, this platform, I think it's my duty to do so, to try and understand more of the dynamics that are happening here. And who better to ask that the former president himself?
Yeah. What sort of resources is this Obama Scholars program giving to you to help with your platform?
The program basically is for almost 1 year, and you're like taking classes at Columbia University, and you are connected with an advisor to help you reimagine or like follow through the path that you want to take. We have different sessions with specialists in different areas like campaign management, like fundraising, like environment, like different areas. So we have experts, we have the classes, and we have advisors too who help us to navigate the work that we are doing or want to.
So the current president of El Salvador was just recently reelected, even though there were only supposed to be one term for presidents. So then, what is the plan for you and Trocota and your work moving forward now that the president has been elected, for a second term?
I mean, it's hard for us because a lot of organizations have been attacked by the government. We among them, we actually don't know. We're trying to figure that out in terms of if we register outside of the country, for example. I mean, it's hard because I think we're going to become like Venezuela or Cuba or Nicaragua or worse, because he's so popular. We're afraid that they start going after the organizations. The Congress approve some regulations that are like very far-reaching to organizations that can put you in jail. Yeah, it's going to be hard because he has control of the Congress, the Supreme Court, and the presidency. So there's no check and balance. The civic space is shrinking more and more, and that's the reality that we have. For once, we do not have the enough resources. The government is good. They pay so much money on TikTok, Facebook, like in different platforms, and they are connecting with the people and also security measures. Yeah, that's why he has like 80 something percent of the approval.
Yeah, it's difficult, and as you say, made even more difficult by the fact that there is genuine popularity there. It's but no less more important.
At some point, I think that's going to change, but it's a waiting game. Like, I think we can keep pushing our causes and what we believe in and fight corruption and so on, but people really don't care of all of that at this moment, at least, because they're like in the honeymoon phase. But I hope that can end soon rather than later.
Yeah. Well, what's one way that maybe people in the United States, people in Minnesota could help support you in what you're doing?
Oh, you can write letters to the Congress people, for them to be vocal about it. Like, it was fun because Ilhan Omar team and another people in Congress actually put a statement asking Secretary Blinken to reevaluate their relationship with El Salvador because they were concerned about the democratic constraints that they are seeing. So yeah, if anyone from Minnesota is listening to this, you should like write to the Congress, to people in Congress, and tell them like you should check up what is happening in El Salvador. And yeah, you can also reach out to me. I'm like pretty happy to talk about the topic. Yeah, make collaborations. I think every collaboration is important.
Great. What is just something positive you wish everyone knew about your home country?
El Salvador is the smallest country in Central America, but it's one of the most beautiful countries. We are called Tierra de Volcanes because we're like the land of volcanoes. We have amazing beaches, we have amazing waves, and surfing there is amazing. If you want to go to El Salvador, you should. It's like an amazing place. And there's this fun fact too. Have you heard about like The Little Prince?
Yes, I've heard the book, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's like one of the most selling, I think it's the second one most sell book in the world, in the history. And El Principito, or The Little Prince, was inspired because of El Salvador.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the mountains, the volcanoes, the landscape. So yeah, I encourage everyone to go to El Salvador. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. We have amazing lakes. I know that Minnesota has like is the
Yeah,
land
we
of
got a few
lakes,
here,
but
but
yeah. But
we don't
yeah,
have
we have like
surfing though. Not we don't
oh
really have surfing, so.
yeah, so you can take advantage of that. And yeah, I think a lot of volcanoes, a lot of experiences, and the Salvadorian people is kind, humble, and they are willing to give you a hand, always.
Well, Luis Vieira, thank you so much for joining today and for your incredible work fighting for democracy, not just in El Salvador, but around all of Central America.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. A lot of negative things, but a lot of fun.
And that's all the time we have today. Thanks again to Luis Vieira for joining and to everyone involved with the Obama Fellowship and the Young Leaders of the Americas Initiative. Globe Minnesota is proud to also host this year's YLI Fellows in Minnesota for professional development and cultural exchange meetings. You can meet these incredible individuals and another group of international visitors at our upcoming Global Social on March 27. The event is open to everyone with discounted tickets for Global Minnesota members. So don't miss your chance to network and get to know 34 impressive international visitors from over 30 countries. Thanks as always to all the members of Global Minnesota who make our programs possible. Be sure to check out our website at globalminnesota.org to find information about upcoming events, learn more about international programs, and sign up for our weekly newsletters. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already, so you can hear untold stories of international connections each month and catch recordings of our public events. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.